Hello again, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Karate Cafe. I'm Gene Myers, a student of Shorinru Shorinkan Karate and Two Circle Jiu-Jitsu, and I'm joined once again by my partners in crime, Pete Shambo, also a student of Shorinru Shorinkan, and Paul Wilson, who's a student of Shorinru Kenshinkan. Hey, guys, long time no see.
Hey, Gene, how's it going?
Going pretty well.
Gene.
Paul, how are you?
I'm just happy to be here, happy to be part of the team.
Yeah, well, great. We haven't done a show in a long time, you know.
And we've actually had people who have emailed and got on the message boards and said what has happened to us, and we really appreciate that because it lets us know that people are listening.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. I'll take the hit. It's mostly been my fault. I've been to a Buddhist monastery in Okinawa for the past 6 months, so.
No. Yeah, he shaved his head and everything, so, you know.
And what is the sound of one mic clapping?
I'll apologize real quick. I had some things change in my life, and better things to do. Well, I hate to say better things to do because this is really enjoyable, but I had other things occupy my time. So we're back, and we're going to be on a regular schedule again.
Or at least we're going to give it a darn good try. We should be recording regularly. And I don't know which episode this is. Do you have a number there, Pete? Is this 39?
This will be 39.
And you know, it's a new year. It's a new show. I think we should just call it number one.
Okay. We can call it number one.
They call it number one. Okay. I'd have to put that in the RSS feed.
Geez. Never mind then.
39 it is.
So, Paul, what have you been doing in our little sabbatical here, our hiatus, if you will?
Well, funny you should mention that, Gene. I have started my own dojo. I've actually started teaching at a little yoga studio about 5 minutes from my house, as a matter of fact. And I've been doing some self-defense seminars and trying to get the word out, and I've been having a good time.
Well, that's great. Good. How's it going so far?
Pretty good. I've got one student that comes regularly.
Mm-hmm.
That's not him in the background. That's my beautiful son. And we've got the seminars are actually doing pretty good. We've had about anywhere from 15 to 25 people at the ones we've given. So those have been going really well.
Excellent. Excellent. That's great.
How about you guys? What have you been doing, Gene?
I've been pissing off grandmasters and masters and all kinds of big shots. It seems I just don't know how to keep my mouth shut, you know. So one thing that really bothers me in the martial arts is ego and people who don't know humility. And I'm not going to go off on a rant, I'll just say that's one thing that really pisses me off. And when I see it, I tend to get a little animated in my response. And so I managed to jerk the chain of a couple of jerks down in Texas. I'm glad. I guess they got a good 10 minutes out of me on their show, and I'm honored.
Well, they had to have some content at some point, so.
Well, I'm glad that I was their content. But it was fun, and I don't, like I say, like I told them, I really don't listen to the show that much. I've tried to listen to a few. I've managed to make it through a couple, two or three, but I can't. I just can't listen to it anymore. For you, it's different, I guess, Paul. It's like a, what did you say? It's like an itch you can't scratch.
It's like flicking a hangnail, and then sometimes it's like slowing down to watch a car wreck.
Exactly, yeah, so, exactly. Got to do a little rubbernecking.
So much for one big martial arts family.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's all good. Sometimes you got to step on toes. We don't mind stepping on toes.
This is how people grow.
Yeah, this
exactly.
is true. So speaking of growing, okay, there's a growing debate, if you will. How's that for a segue? In the discussion of Bunkai. Just before we began recording, Paul and I and Pete and I were discussing about how Bunkai seems to be being examined and being discussed a lot more often lately than it has been in the recent past. And so we thought we'd continue the discussion and talk a little bit about Bunkai.
Okay, if I could interject for a minute, because we do have listeners that aren't martial artists but listen to us because they enjoy the world of martial arts or traditional style. A definition of bunkai would be, loosely off the top of my head, is the practical application of a move inside a kata, inside one of the prescribed moves that we make, and how a lot of times how the individual karateka interprets it as a self-defense move. Is that a fair definition?
I think so.
Yeah, that's about right.
So now, you know, there's one school of thought, or I think it's a bit unenlightened, if you will, that there's hidden meanings to the moves in kata, and that there's a single interpretation, and bunkai is either right or wrong, you know. What's your guys' thoughts about that?
Pete?
Okay, well, my thought is we don't all have the same body type. We don't all have the same life experiences. What you see, especially when you get to an upper level, a black belt and above, we'll say, maybe even a little bit less than a black belt, when you start approaching that level of experience, you see something, and like for example, I can't kick high. Some people can kick high. One person might see a practical application of a move being a kick. You know, maybe a kick to the wrist, like you and I discussed last night, Gene, or you know, even a kick to the head in some styles. I can't do that. I might see the same move as a back fist or an arm bar. I mean, to be extreme. A lot of it, there is no one set bunkai to an application. There can't be.
Paul, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm in the same camp with Pete. I mean, you know, just going from, you know, my own personal experience, you know, we'd learn a kata and they would say, you know, this is the technique, and then there's the obvious technique of whatever it is. You know, it looks like you're blocking with both hands, or, you know, whatever it is, you look like you're punching. But then, you know, someone else will come along, and I think through visualization will say, like, you know, okay, no, it's this way, and it's kind of one of these. And then I think that there's, as you start analyzing it, and, you know, I'll do a technique, and I mean, I could be doing like one step techniques, you know, down the road somewhere, or I could be doing a technique in another kata, and, you know, it'll suddenly click that, like, oh, that's in that kata, that's a technique that's in that kata. And I have heard some people say that, like, you know, somebody's bunkai is wrong, but, you know, I've seen videos of, you know, people doing bunkai and people going like, oh no, that's not the right bunkai, and I'm like, well, why not, you know?
Well, if it works and if it's recognizable as those moves, not strictly, but I mean, if you know, the general interpretation is you can see the kata or the moves from the kata inside that bunkai, and that bunkai works, then it's correct. I mean,
and I think you just encapsulated the thought, Pete, right there. If it works, okay, it's correct. There is no wrong interpretation of bunkai. You know, you take any move or series of moves from a kata, and if it's directly applicable to your self-defense, then, and it works, okay? If it's some, you know, flowery, extravagant series of moves that has no chance of working on the street, well, then it's wrong.
You know, I think one of the things that is kind of limiting with people's interpretation of kata, and maybe makes one person say this technique is wrong vice that technique, is kind of maybe where you stop. You know, one of my big problems with people when they do bunkai is they'll do it and they try and keep, you know, the entire sequence of techniques, you know, or, you know, what they perceive to be the sequence of techniques. And, you know, so it's kind of like they're reaching for technique sometimes. You know, it's, you know, some stuff is just meant to be, you know, a block and a strike. And then if you take them down, you do whatever, you know, it's like they're trying to get to a certain part of the kata by, you know, just doing too much work. And then the flip side of that is, not the flip side, but the continuation of that is like they try and preserve the footwork. You know, and you know, like Nihonshi kata is a perfect example. You know, I see people doing bunkai all the time, and they're so tied up in keeping their feet, you know, moving in that, and, you know, side to side, when, in my mind, Nihonshi kata, you know, you're not going to do that. You know, so, but a lot of people will have great hand techniques, but they're trying to, they're limiting their hand techniques by trying to keep their feet like they are in the kata instead of taking it for what it is, which is, you know, this is a collection of techniques.
Mm-hmm. Interesting about the Nihonshi kata. I just finished a book by a gentleman named Clayton. He's a PhD. I don't know what his doctorate is in, but it's called Shotokan Secrets. You ever read that book, either of you guys?
No, I haven't.
Nope.
I guess historically there are some inaccuracies, but his theory is that shurite, or the karate that came out of the city of you know, in Okinawa, the shuri, it was developed in defense of the shuri castle. Okay, and that the Nihonshi kata were specifically designed with the number one, if you're back, how to fight with your back against the wall. Number royalty by keeping them behind you, and the hook punch that comes a couple of times in that kata. That what you're actually doing there, instead of punching someone to the side, is you're grabbing someone, an opponent, and holding them in front of you, and using them as a shield, if you will, from other attackers with whoever you're supposed to be defending toward your back. It's an interesting interpretation. I mean, that's an interesting bunkai for that move. I've heard, you know, some instructors say that you keep that hook punch there, that fist there, because you're protecting your solar plexus, and yet you're leaving your groin completely exposed. You know, whereas if you had a human shield in front of you, you wouldn't have to worry about that. The only thing you'd have to defend is your head and your legs, and that's all you're doing in the Nihonshi kata when you think about it. You know, So I mean, it's just one theory. I don't know how applicable that bunkai would be, like say on the street today, but it certainly is interesting from a historical perspective. You know.
Yeah, I'm here sitting here trying to have do Nihonshi to figure out how that would work.
If you can, I'm not going to promote the book or hype it in any way, but if you do see it, you know, it's called Shotokan Secrets, and it's by a gentleman named Clayton. I think his name is David Clayton, not David Clayton Thomas from Blood, Sweat, and Tears for all you baby boomers out there, but it's just David Clayton, I think it's David. But if you get, it's an interesting read. You know, and it's some of the most unique interpretation of bunkai that I've ever seen, and some of it I can see how would be very realistic, and some of it is like, geez, I don't know. Like, for example, his theory that Chinto kata was developed to learn how to fight on a stairway. You know, having the crane stance is to get your one leg out of the way from people who are coming up the stairs trying to grab your legs, and so you can kick at them. And I don't know, Paul, in your Chinto kata, do you have early in the kata, do you have a jumping kick, or do you have two front kicks?
No, we have a jump kick.
You have a jump kick. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's to like basically clear the stairway. You know.
Ah.
When we were training in Shorinkan, okay, we had the jump kick. When we converted to, when we were training in Shidokan, I misspoke. We were training in Shidokan, right, Pete?
Yes.
Yeah, Shidokan, we had the jump kick. And when we went to Shorinkan, it was, instead of a jump kick, it was two front kicks. They changed to two front kicks. In any event, you know, I'm digressing here. It's an interesting book. If you like bunkai and looking at different theories about bunkai and different ideas, you know, I'd say pick it up.
Did he maintain that his were the definitive bunkai or
No. He gives some historical background about Matsumura and Itosu and several other people. And again, this is written by somebody who trains in Shotokan, okay? And so he's looking at it from Funakoshi's, you know, as a descendant of Funakoshi's school. But, no, he starts with, like, when Commodore Matthew Perry came to Okinawa, you know? And he talks about something called the Shuri Crucible, which is the people of Okinawa were kind of in the middle of they were getting pressure from Japan. I mean, the ruler of Japan allowed the shogunate or whatever it was, whatever the rank was, in to rule Okinawa. But he answered to the, you know, whoever the folks that were in Japan. Okay, so they were getting pressure from Japan, and they're also getting pressure from Western societies like the United States and Great Britain, who wanted to open Japan and Okinawa to trade and wanted to put a lot of pressure on it for trade. So they were anticipating some kind of invasion either from Japan or from the West. And so the theory goes that Matsumura and Itosu developed these kata to develop muscle memory in the guards and in the security forces of Shuri Castle. And there's an extraction team about how you get the royalty out of there, and there's a confrontation team about, and he talks about in kata disarming somebody with a sword or with a rifle with a bayonet attached, you know, a single shot rifle. It's interesting reading. Some of it is applicable, I think, to today, and some of it isn't. You know, I mean, how many times are you going to actually, you know, take a saber away from somebody, you know, today? But it's a pretty interesting book. You know, the best part for me was the bunkai, which is, you know, why I'm bringing it up, you know, with this discussion. So if you have a chance, anybody out there, you guys too, you know, pick it up. It's called Shotokan Secrets. It's interesting. Borrow it from the book if you don't want to, or from the library if you don't want to buy it.
You know, I think that kind of points what you touched on, Gene, is, you know, I guess it's like whatever branch, you know, or whatever large, you know, division of whatever martial art you want to point at will kind of drive the direction the bunkai goes, I think, as far as, yeah, because I think it's just like kata. It's like what they chose to emphasize in that kata, or what, you know, what that grandmaster who or whoever leads that style wants to show or wants to, you know, emphasize within the kata from a gross standpoint, from just like, you know, a big move like we're talking about with Shinto. You know, somebody wanted to emphasize, you know, the jump kick. Somebody just wanted to emphasize, you know, multiple kicks, whatever. And I think that kind of drives the bunkai, you know, and maybe the flavor of the style itself comes out of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I lost my train of thought. My dog's barking, and I lost my train of thought.
The train has left the station.
Absolutely. That's right. Like Pete was saying, a lot also depends on. I'm sorry, guys. He'll stop in a minute. It's my wife and my daughter just came home from the in-laws, so
that's okay.
He's got to let everybody know about it. Like Pete was saying, you know, it's a lot of what you bring to the table personally, your own physical characteristics and your own experience, and Pete and I have discussed, you know, before, like what we'll see the same series of moves in a bunkai or in a kata and interpret the bunkai differently. Pete will be more from like, you know, a striking, you know, perspective, you know, which is fine. You know, with my background in wrestling and jiu-jitsu, I'm looking at throws, you know, so we might see the same move or series of moves and interpret it two different ways. Both are correct as long as they work for us. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you may not have been thinking about it from a certain way, and he is, and you may, you know, he may see a strike that you didn't see, you know, or an opportunity for a strike or an opportunity for a, you know, a kick or something that whereas, but you're seeing, like, well, there's an opening, they're off balance, you know, or they might be off balance by this technique, that kind of thing.
And the thing is, by sharing it, we both learn a new move.
Yeah. And, I mean, we don't know what, you know, say Matsumura Tosu or any of these other guys, you know, meant, you know, and they're different too. Like, for example, Itosu. Historically, from what I've read, he was a very powerful guy. You know, short but very powerful. So what would work for him wouldn't necessarily work for other people. I mean, among his contemporaries. You know, maybe he wanted them to learn a particular bunkai for these moves, but it might not work for him. So he must have said, "Well, okay, how about if you try look at it from this perspective?" And sometimes, you know, maybe a block might be like a joint lock, you know, but sometimes it's just a block, depending on who you are.
And, you know? Yeah, and sometimes, you know, and I've known people who, you know, when they're doing bunkai, you know, everything has to be something. You know, and yeah, sometimes it's just a block.
You know, that makes me think of, there was a grandmaster by the name of Sigmund Freud who once said a cigar is just a cigar.
Exactly.
And I think of that in kata sometimes. Sometimes I'll try to think what the bunkai to it. It helps me to do my kata if I think of what the attacker is doing or what I'm supposed to be doing. And there are times when there's a move that I can't explain, and I just think, well, it's just taught me a new way to move. It's not necessarily anything that's either a defense or an attack. It's just a new way to move.
Yeah, you know, when for a while I was kind of, you know, trying to dance with the crane a lot on a lot of my kata, and I got kind of a mindset where I was going, you know, like doing the pinan kata and ananku, well, pretty much anything, any kata where you're doing maybe a 180 degree turn or especially a 90 degree turn, you know, I would kind of go like, oh, well, there's crane right there. Let's change body. It's Taisabak. And that's not really, and that's what I was talking about knowing when to start and stop. For me, knowing when to start and stop a technique is, you know, when you're doing a big turn, I think that's either, you know, unless it kind of obviously looks like it may be a throw, I usually think it's, yeah, you're turning to do a technique to get a little extra power to put some hakotsura in there, but then there are times where I kind of go like, no, I'm just turning, you know, because I was trying to get something out of it, and I'm trying to pivot and trying to stay on my toes and do a thing, and you know, I'm trying to fight, get my hips in the right, and I'm going like, you know, this is just, it's a turn in a kata, that's all it is, you know, in my head, and again, I could be missing it, but. Yeah, I was trying to force it into, you know, where my mind was going on that particular occasion.
But I mean, it could be that same move could be interpreted by somebody else as a throw. Well, I know just what you're talking about, and to me, I'm thinking, okay, there's got to be a throw in there somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, but. Like you're saying, not necessarily all the time. You know, it could be just turning to, like you say, generate more power because you're being attacked from another angle, you know, and you want to put more emphasis into that particular technique, whether it's a block or a kick or, you know, punch or whatever.
Right. And then the rub comes when I'm, you know, just like I'm saying, or just like we're saying, is I try and kind of force it into a, in my mind, a prearranged, you know, like, this has got to be this kind of thing, and that's when I start getting a little confused, a little frustrated with maybe a technique or something like that, because I'm just like, well, it's just not working. Well, maybe because it's not supposed to. And then that's when I got to kind of say, well, okay, that application wasn't the right one. You know, that maybe it doesn't fit for me, or just doesn't fit the technique, you know, so, and I just got to drop back and punt.
You know, and a thought that I always have, or that I, especially just now, thinking of what these masters were doing back in days gone by, that they were, it wasn't just an art they were teaching. They were teaching, like Gene said in the book that he read, they were teaching a self-defense. And these guys weren't just the generals or whatever equivalent. They were also in the battle. So I can't imagine them saying there's only one way to there's only one practical application for this move. They would say, if they saw somebody doing something a little different, but it worked in battle, it worked in practice, I couldn't imagine them saying that's wrong.
No. Exactly.
No, and because that's how they are developed, you know, between, you know, people going to China on a boat and, you know, or seeing somebody down at the docks and getting into a fight and going like, oh, yeah, that's pretty cool. I'm taking that, you know, and that's one of the ways that the art developed. So,
just to get back to this book that I was referencing earlier in our discussion, finger stabs in kata. This is kind of funny. At least I was chuckling about it when I was reading about it. The author says, okay, Itosu was saying, don't do finger stabs. And he teaches us this in kata. He says, you look at, okay, there's a finger stab in Pian Sandan, right?
Yeah.
What's the next move is to break a wrist grab, okay? Same thing in Kusan Kudai, toward the end of Kusan Kudai. You do a finger stab. You know, what's the next move? Well, you're spinning underneath your extended arm to break a wrist grab. You know, so the author's saying that Itosu was telling us, okay, if you want to do a finger stab, be prepared to get out of a wrist grab that's going to inevitably foul when you try to do that technique. And you think about it, you know. Now the only other finger stab I can think of offhand would be in Pian Shodan. You know, after the three shuto strikes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you think of the bunkai, you know, for those shuto strikes, you're backing somebody up and you're actually striking, you know, people. You know, it's not likely that, you know, that finger stab would. It's more than likely what you're doing is just finishing somebody off. But even there, with what you just said, Paul, you know, you follow that. That finger strike in Pian Shodan, next move is that big turn. Could be a throw.
Right.
You know, so the guy, it just got me laughing. You know, basically the guy reading between the lines, this Dr. Clayton is saying, okay, do finger strike or, you know, your finger stabs, but be prepared to have to do something after you get grabbed. Just kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, you know, the interpretation I get for that, for Pian Shodan is, you know, not so much that you're backing somebody up and then lunging in and striking, but I think that, you know, that's kind of one of those parts where I kind of think like they're trying to get the student to generate a little power, and so that's how they get them going. You know, you block once, you block twice, boom, you go in there for the big one. And I mean, I don't think that they're, in my mind, they're not. You know, I'm not expecting that's the sequence of, you know, you turn to somebody and they punch and they block, and then all of a sudden they decide because they punch and you block that they're going to run away, and now right. I'm chasing after them. I think it's just get the student to do, I think the technique, the bunkai and that sequence is really, is a parry down, strike in to a pressure point to load them up, and that parry down is you're parrying a block, or parrying a punch rather, and so from there you're going into a wrist lock with a throw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're grabbing them in a wrist lock and then turning that into a throw from a parry. I don't think it's that sequence. I mean, I agree with where you're going with all that, but that's from my end is like those couple of shutos leading into it, or they're just a cigar.
Okay.
You know, they're there for to lead into that.
Another side of that discussion. Is, and I'm sure we've all heard this, moves that are repeated in the kata are the ones that, whether it's Matsumura or Itosu or whoever designed the kata, they wanted you to know well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as long as we're on the subject of Pian Shodan, that comes up. You have those shutos. And I agree with you, Paul. I think what you're doing is simultaneously pairing a punch and striking, you know,
right.
Whether it's, you know, to some it's a nerve strike to you know, to the side of the head or to the neck, whatever, you know. I don't know who, was it Matsumura that designed Pian Shodan, or was that Itosu?
I think that was Itosu.
Itosu, yeah. That
being a Matsumura stylist.
Yeah, but that particular technique is one that he wanted you to know.
You know, right.
Same thing.
Oh,
in,
no.
Same,
oh,
I was just going to say same thing in Shinto, you know, Shinto kata, where you're leaning away okay, and you're doing a down block with one hand, and it looks like a rising block or a kamae with the other hand, and stepping into that. You know what I'm talking about? You know the series I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Shinto?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't lean back, but.
Oh, you don't?
No, no, we stay pretty much squared up.
Cool. Yeah.
You know. Well, you know, what I was going to say was I was working with one of our seventh degrees down here in Texas, John Shipes, and he constantly thinks about kata. And we were doing a weapons kata, and whatever the footwork was, he says, "You see that footwork?" He goes, "That's the same footwork that was in, you know, like Seisan or something." You know, and he said that exact same thing. He says, "You know, if you see it once, you see it twice, it's important. You know, it's something that they wanted to get through to you. You know, that sequence of you know, footwork or hand strike, you know, whatever it is important." And that, you know, we were talking before the show about some stuff, and I had heard it, you know, back in the day that they said that, you know, really a kata is a fighting style. It's like, you know, one kata in and of itself is an entire fighting style, is everything you need for a certain style of fighting. Which maybe kind of goes with, you know, the whole fighting on the stairs thing, but I'm not buying that. But anyway.
Neither am I.
Yeah. But I mean, I understand the concept is, you know, that the Pinan katas were a style of fighting. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and everyone they used to say, it was like, you know, 10 years you would learn one kata. And you would learn that kata back, forth, and up and down. And the ancient Okinawans, when they learned that, they were learning a fighting style. Just like, you know, crane or tiger or whatever in the Chinese styles. And then the next kata they learned was another way of fighting. You know, and that's why they only had a couple, because they wrung those kata out. You know, and so I think that, yeah, when you're going through a kata and you see something that repeats, that's obviously a style. You know, and it may reflect later on in a different kata, because that's part of the fighting style.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting. Gentlemen, one thing I'll let our listeners in on is we discussed that we're going to try and stick to a half an hour, and we're about at that point already.
Oh, so soon?
So soon, yes. It flies by. I'd like some feedback from our listeners. I mean, like we discussed in the beginning, everybody was really supportive, and they really wanted us to come back, and here we are. What do you think? Do you want us to go a half an hour? Do you want us to have like a strict time limit of a half an hour? Do you like it when our conversations would stretch on if we had something more to say? We'd like your feedback at karatecafe@gmail.com and let us know what you think.
And we also have some forums that have been since we haven't been broadcasting, if you will. The forum has been kind of quiet, but our forums are located at www.karatecafe.com/forums. Feel free to write in about anything that's on your mind related to martial arts, and we'd love to hear from you. We always respond promptly, the three of us, so you know, join in the discussion, and that's what we're here for. We want to hear about what you guys are thinking about, and anything that you'd like us to discuss on the podcast here. Feel free to suggest any topics.
And if anybody lives in the Dallas, Texas area, Paul, you have a MySpace page they could go to and learn about your dojo?
Oh, sure, yeah. It's www.myspace.com/KenshinCon, which is the name of our style, all one word, and that'll give you the information about our wonderful class, woohoo! And also talk about, there's also links on there to, well, right back here to the podcast, and just some information in general on martial arts.
Okay, very good. So that's so much for our discussion on Bunkai today. Next time, maybe more Bunkai, maybe something else. We've got several topics in the works that we'd like to discuss, and we'll get to them all in due time, as they say. But I guess for now, I'm Gene Myers.
Pete Shambo.
And I'm Paul Wilson.
Thanks for listening to Karate Cafe. We'll talk to you next time.